Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's game with words where the questions can come from almost anywhere.
Are you serious? Are you going to do the periodic table again?
We got letter after letter after letter.
That's what's in the periodic table. That's letter after letter after letter.
Saying how stupid can they be?
Until that guy ran out of paper.
Right. Today, from Stowe, Vermont, in front of an audience we promise won't miss a word. How did you know that back there?
English major.
English major. Oh. English major.
Finally came in handy, didn't it, sir?
$200,000 answer right there.
Share the wealth with Says You, next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Several explosions have rocked the Syrian capital of Damascus. Syrian state television is blaming the attack on the Israeli military. From Jerusalem, NPR's Emily Harris reports.
Israel is officially not commenting on the reports that its Air Force struck targets in Damascus. This latest attack was much larger than one on Friday. Both were apparently aimed at missiles in Syria that were intended to go to Hezbollah, the militant organization in Lebanon and close ally of Syrian President Bashar Assad. Israel has repeatedly said it will do whatever necessary to keep weapons that threaten Israel out of Hezbollah's control. One Israeli commentator said Sunday that because of the uncertain future in Syria, Hezbollah is likely to move as many weapons as possible into Lebanon. He said Israel would then likely continue to attack, leading to a ritual that could spiral out of control. Emily Harris, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Moving on to Britain, where the deputy speaker of the lower house of parliament is strongly denying allegations of rape against him. Nigel Evans says the accusations are completely false. NPR's Philip Reeves reports he's one of Britain's longest-serving members of parliament.
Nigel Evans is from the Conservative Party that heads Britain's coalition government. He's reportedly been released on bail after being arrested but not charged on suspicion of rape and sexual assault. British media reports say the allegations against Evans, who's gay, concerned two men in their 20s and incidents between July 2009 and March 2013. One of his colleagues said he believed Evans would prove to be a victim, not a persecutor. Whatever the outcome, this is another complication for Britain's Conservative Prime Minister, David Cameron, who's hit a rough patch, thanks in part to a surge in popularity for the anti-European Union right-wing UK Independence Party, UKIP. In local elections Thursday, UKIP took nearly a quarter of the vote. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
On the West Coast, damp air moving in from the Pacific, calmer winds, plus possible rain later today, helping fire crews battle a 43-square-mile wildfire burning through coastal mountains in Southern California. The fire broke out Thursday near Camarillo and forced evacuations, but now some homeowners are being allowed to return, among them Alexander Quinones.
Yeah, the stresses went away from all the fire, all the smoke, animals that were burned out. But yeah, everything's better now.
Quinones spoke to KNBC TV. Nearly 2,000 firefighters using engines, bulldozers, and aircraft are working to contain the fire. Authorities say they're more than halfway there. The blaze is one of hundreds that have been sparked in California so far this year. In Bangladesh, heavy machinery at the site of last week's collapse of a garment factory building in Dhaka as Muslims are called to prayer. More than 600 bodies have now been recovered, and authorities fear the total will rise further. 9 people are being held in connection with the disaster. And from Washington, this is NPR News. Lawyers for a man charged with lying to investigators after the Boston Marathon bombing asking a judge to release him from jail. In court documents filed this weekend, they say Robel Filipos had nothing to do with the bombings and is not a flight risk. A detention hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. Two other friends of bombing suspect Jokhar Tsarnaev are charged with conspiring to obstruct justice. 8 U.S. and NATO troops are dead after the bloodiest day of the year so far for coalition forces in Afghanistan. The fatalities come a week after the Taliban announced the start of its annual spring offensive, as NPR's Sean Carberry reports.
One NATO official simply described Saturday as a tough day. It started when an improvised explosive device killed five U.S. Army troops in Kandahar province. Then an Afghan Army soldier shot and killed two U.S. troops in western Farah province. And in northern Afghanistan, an insurgent attack killed another NATO service member whose nationality has not yet been released. Despite these losses, U.S. and NATO troop deaths are at their lowest level in years, and nearly half this year's U.S. fatalities have been caused by helicopter crashes or other non-hostile activity. Afghan forces are now suffering hundreds of combat casualties each month. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
President Obama arrived back in Washington last night after a three-day trip that took him to Mexico and Costa Rica. Air Force One landed back at Maryland's Andrews Air Force Base last evening. The president is not sticking around the White House today, though. He's back on the road again, heading to Ohio to give his first commencement address of 2013 to graduates at Ohio State University in Columbus. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Domtar, the sustainable paper company, committed to the environmentally responsible production and use of paper. More at paperbecause.com.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Stowe, Vermont comes from the good folks at Vermont Public Radio, the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center, and the Stowe Mountain Lodge, home for Says You near the top of Vermont. On the web at StoweMountainLodge.com. Spell out mountain, put an E on Stowe.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From deep in the heart of Vermont's Green Mountains, welcome to Stowe, Vermont, and Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. She's come north to spend time with her favorite Vermonters, specifically Ben and Jerry, Fritz and Akbar. He's popped up the pike past Montpelier, and now he's really out in the trees. Tony Khan. And he's as close to the Canadian border as the Canadians are going to permit. Mr. Barry Nolan. Who's going to lead tonight?
The whipped cream on our team.
Francine.
Francine
will be the captain. To my left, team two. She woke up this morning inspired to climb every mountain she saw. Carolyn Fay Fox. Three. She loves traveling through Green Mountains, calls it one of my favorite things. Paula Lyons. And he must do this show because he loves it, because it ain't for the do-re-mi, Mr. Arnie Raisman. The hills are alive up here. Who's captain?
Well, shut my Von Trapp, me.
Arnie. Boy, got a mixed reaction, didn't it, Arnie? Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points, define, and for an additional five, try to divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, skeletons in the closet.
Skeletons in the closet, that would be anything in your past or anything you don't want people to know about.
That's true. That's 5 points.
Yes.
That's negative. Yes.
It's negative.
It is.
Right. They're not happy skeletons.
and
it comes from I don't know, some serial killer in the past who actually had skeletons in his closet?
You're a lot closer than you know.
No, I know I'm close.
Okay, that's fine.
Do I have to name this person?
No, you don't.
Okay.
But you have to name the closet.
You have
it was a walk-in closet.
Yeah. No.
You have to name
no.
the closet.
It was more of a cellar.
It was not more of a cellar. Actually.
It was
a closet.
It literally was a closet.
Like a utility closet.
Not an attic or something?
If I told you it came from 19th century England, would that help at all?
It was an English closet.
It was a water closet.
Is exactly right.
Oh, good.
The water closet is right, which, of course, as we know, is... Yes,
the
okay.
Loo.
Yes.
That's the loo. And why would skeletons in the closet have anything to do with
Jack
the water closet?
Well, you'd have to call the plumber.
Barry has an idea.
Let's see, how disgusting do you want us to be? Yeah,
I'm going to give you 8 points. I'm going to go to Barry. Barry, what do you
think? Before we had indoor plumbing and running water, the water closet actually involved excavation into the earth where a great place to throw a body because who's going to look?
You can laugh all you want. He's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Wow.
And you don't have that thing to worry about where neighbors are alerted by a foul odor.
I guess that's true. In 19th century England, closet meant water closet, the lavatory, a potential hiding place for the body that you would have to hack up in a place where it was easily cleaned. So that's where skeletons in the closet comes from, and horrifying, isn't it?
We're so happy.
10 points
that.
For that team. Okay. Let's try this one, Tony.
Yes.
Definition and derivation of fit to be tied.
Fit to be tied means taken beyond your ability to react calmly to something really bothersome.
Yes.
This has to do with being tied down in some way.
It has to do with
cargo, perhaps with animals.
Would it be more like restrained in bedlam?
You know something? This is going to be your category today, isn't it? He's exactly right.
So you're crazy enough that's basically...
It's going to be like Marat's sound.
You know,
Francine's motion there, which worked well on the radio, is...
Think of my arms wrapping themselves around my own back in a straitjacket-like manner.
That's exactly right.
Fit
10 points. Very good. Let me...
That is part of Francine's book on tape of 50 Shades of Grey.
Evidently, in 1804, get this, it actually became a short-lived official clinical designation for asylum patients to be straitjacketed lest they become so dangerous. The official use was abruptly truncated a year or so later when the PR guys got in.
Yeah.
But the phrase got out anyway, and that's where it came from. Try this one, Arnie. I don't know if you'll get this, but I guarantee you will never forget it.
Okay.
Definition and derivation of chic.
Chic?
Yes.
As in au courant and...
Oui.
Okay. Oui. Little au courant. Okay, so it means wearing the latest, being fashionable, trendy. Okay, and where it comes from.
Oh, I should spell C-H-I-C, sorry.
C-H-I-C.
Yes.
I'm assuming this has something vaguely to do with the French language?
Well, I don't want to throw you off. It's but I think you look elsewhere for the root, actually.
Chicanery, perhaps?
Oh, that's what a great that's guess. Nice. Nope. Nowhere near correct, but a great guess.
Yeah.
Great.
We liked it, so. Good. Chic.
Is it a shortened word?
Chicken.
Chicken. Yeah, the latest in chicken.
Right, yes.
Chicken in a basket.
Now, what a lovely chicken you're wearing tonight.
Right.
I didn't really think that you would get this derivation, but it is such a wonderful thing to find out that I wanted to put this in.
Nothing to do with the sheiks of Araby?
Nothing.
Okay.
No, another good guess. I'm going to give you points for the guess.
Okay,
I think that's good.
Was it initially pronounced sheik and not chick?
No.
It was not.
Initially not even French.
Okay, so it was actually Czech.
No, I'm going to give you 6 points for the definition and the guesses. Anyone in the audience know this?
Chicken.
Well, then we're all going to learn something.
Chicka boom, boom, boom.
No? In 1855, the French began to mock the German word schick, S-C-H-I-C-K, which in German meant elegance or style, a Teutonic aesthetic the French found ironic.
I see.
Chic was originally an insult.
Interesting.
And I couldn't believe it when I found that, and I thought it was great. So 6 points for that. Nice effort, Arnie. Try this one, Francine. Definition and derivation of rings a bell.
Rings a bell means that you are reminded of something.
Yes.
Where might that come from?
I know the origin of this as explained by Pee Wee Herman.
Yes, I do too.
How about having to do with church bells, alerting people because something of significance has happened?
You know something?
Perhaps an attack on the church?
Well, not an attack, no. But that's, you know, the church bells is where you want to go. That's exactly right. It's actually very good. Very good, you guys. Rings a bell, actually, one of the definitions is actually the closest, sounds familiar. Rings a bell sounds familiar. Uh-huh. Does that give you any more help on that?
Well, you already rang
the
bell.
The church bells were rung at certain times to tell you what time it was.
That's exactly right.
There you go.
Very good. There are many possibilities for this derivation. Usually in these categories, there are like five or six derivations, people argue, but the one we found that goes back the furthest, it is most likely from Central Europe in the 14 and 1500s. It is the characteristic toll of the town church bell to which residents could reliably set timepieces.
Oh.
So that's where it seems to come from, and I'm sure we'll get mail.
Yeah.
All right, try this one, Paula. Definition and derivation of the upper hand.
Well, when someone has the upper hand, it means that they're likely to beat you. They have knowledge that you don't know they have. They have skill or expertise that you didn't realize they have. They have power that you didn't know they have. So they have the upper hand in any situation. They're going to win.
The control of the situation.
So is it from playing cards, card games?
It is not from card games.
Okay. It's reminding me of that whole thing of like grabbing the baseball bat until you... Just another thing that works really well on radio, but... Is that along any of those lines?
Could you describe that for me? I'm sorry.
When you put your hands going up to the bat and the person who gets on top.
Who's going to win the choice? Who's going to be up first?
You know something?
Yeah. Oh.
That's exactly right. 10 points. That is exactly right. Now, again, there's lots of controversy on where this comes from, but in its current... present definition, it seems to come from sandlot baseball.
Sandlot baseball.
Where you determine who's up last, a great advantage, by first tossing a bat to your opponent.
Right.
Wherever
right.
he catches it,
right.
from that point upward, opponents alternately place hand over hand until finally, at the top, one team has the upper hand and can make the choice.
Wow. Cool.
I hear disagreement from the audience.
I think it's how my dentist restrains me.
With a baseball bat?
Just one.
An area I just don't want to explore?
Yeah, no.
I'm sure we'll get lots of mail on these, but that's what we got. And finally, Barry, walk the straight and narrow.
Oh, yeah.
Definition and derivation of walk the straight and narrow.
Walk the straight and narrow is to comply with all rules, regulations, and requirements.
And a breathalyzer test.
And a breathalyzer test.
Which suggests a derivation.
It referred to having to walk someplace where if you fell to either side, you would be hurt.
No.
Okay.
Walk the straight in this,
how does that originally get spelled? With a G?
Straight? Yes.
Okay, so it's straight.
Is it a biblical reference?
It is exactly. Matthew 7:14.
The way is straight and the way is narrow, but if you walk it, you're gonna get to heaven.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Good job, you guys. We put that one together.
Good.
It is the actual description of the path to heaven. From Matthew 7:14, narrow is the gate and straight is the way which leadeth to the house of God. So that's where that comes from.
That's why none of us knew it.
I have been spending so much time with the Bible.
There you go. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends Lauren Barragar and Mark Mazengarb. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Arnie, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points up for grabs to Francine if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Arnie, if she can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word TEG. T-E-G-G. TEG.
There's an acronym in there somewhere.
Gentlemen? Next live performance is in Port Townsend, Washington, Friday, June 21st. It's a community Says You to benefit the Clemente Course for the Humanities, featuring Says You team captains and local denizens vying for verbal supremacy. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's SaysYou. We hope you'll be there for an evening of wit and wordplay as the whole town turns out to support community education. That's Friday, June 21st in Port Townsend, Washington. A live performance of Says You. Says You returns after this from home. Says thanks to Vermont Public Radio for your help and support in Stowe, to Lance Olson and the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center for providing a great place to play, and to the Stowe Mountain Lodge for letting us close down the mountain this season and giving us a weekend we will not soon forget. You can see where we stayed at StoweMountainLodge.com. Don't forget to spell out mountain and put an E on Stowe. The dilemma, what to get the folks as Mother's Day and Father's Day fast draw nigh. The answer, Says Us, the scripts and quips of Says You. Two volumes, our first two seasons, 40 full shows. A gift so versatile, you can play together in the car on the way over, wrap it in the rest stop, and presto, instant thoughtfulness. You can find out more at saysyou.net. Thank you.
is Lauren Baragar and Mark Nasengard. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Let's take a few moments and thank our scorekeepers. That's Mr. Anders Odie on the left and Mr. Benjamin Scherer on the right. Thanks for keeping the score, guys. We have had a few beautiful moments with the word TEG. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
TEG, you're it.
Okay.
That's not what the card says. Here's what the card says. TEG, the velvety layer covering newly grown antlers on a moose.
Mm. Ooh.
What was the first word?
A big ooh. Did you hear
layer?
That? The velvety layer,
velvety layer.
Velvety. On antlers.
Moose moss.
Moose moss. Only grows on the north side of the antlers.
Yes. Moose moss is how we're going to describe it from now on.
Moose moss, I like that.
Is TEG. It could be that, or it could be something else. Arnold?
Actually, it's a lamb among the cauliflower. It's a good form of camouflage when the sheep start seeing a farmer come at it with shears. It becomes a TEG. It's... where's he going with this? Oh, my God. Actually, it's physician shorthand. Take extra gamma globulin. No. It's... It's a sheep that's never been sheared. That's what a TEG is.
A sheep that's never been sheared.
Why the cauliflower?
Because that's what it looks like if it's never been sheared.
Ah.
I don't know. You have to be there. Start with a glass menagerie.
Looks like cauliflower.
Yeah. Tastes like chicken.
Tastes like chicken.
Yeah. Right.
Should have known. You got anything else, or can we move on now?
Let's see. No, I think I'll add it. I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Okay. It's a sheep that's never been sheared, or,
never, ever.
Paula, it's something else.
It's virgin wool.
It's virgin wool.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's raw wool before it's been spun or dyed. That's TEG.
Raw wool.
That's what it is, really?
Yeah. Raoul before he's been spun and blended.
Not Raoul.
Raw
wool.
Oh, raw wool. And my friend Raoul.
It's raw wool before it's been spun or dyed. That's what it actually is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's one of those three. It is either raw wool before it's been spun or dyed, a sheep that's never been sheared, or moose moss. Velvet coating on antlers that grows only on the north side.
Or one person who's been looking over the other person's shoulder.
Well, the choice is yours, Francine. What do you think?
I'm no expert in any of these fields.
Oh.
But I know that Tony and Barry are.
Yes. Well,
I do know that there is a word for the early growth of an antler.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's it. I just know that it's out there somewhere. And what are we to make of the fact that these two people sitting next to each other both chose the same animal in the same basic state of untouched?
I think that suggests they've been married too long.
Is
Never.
This some devious trick, though, to send us awry?
All right, all right. There's no clear direction here. Would you agree?
No.
Well, I have a...
No, I'll go with velvety...
You're going with the velvety layer?
I'll go with
layer.
Velvety layer on the...
Yeah, end. I would, too. I would, too, simply because I know there is a word for it, and perhaps they would not have known that otherwise. I don't know. I go with Barry, I think.
It's as good a method as any.
There's something very magnetic about him, and I'm
velvety feeling... layer on the moose antlers.
Yeah.
Carolyn, they have come to...
She said with little conviction.
They have come to the conclusion that it TEG is the velvety, I don't know, it's moose moss. That's what they think it is. Is that, in fact, what TEG means?
Please fake a definition.
Oh.
Please fake a definition, as you did. 10 points for your side. Okay, audience, what do you think? Tough one. How many sheep? What am I supposed to... How many think it's a sheep that's never been sheared? How many think it's raw wool that's been before it's been spun or dyed?
Oh, you know, this Well, this is a cauliflower. They do a lot of weaving. They might know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Paula, that wasn't even close. This audience is convinced that it's raw wool before it's been spun or dyed. Is that in fact what teg is?
Teg. Please fake a definition.
It is not. Because the definition actually reads...
Teg, a sheep that's never been sheared.
10 points.
Don't ask me. That's
for Arnie's team.
Okay.
Okay, here it comes. Here comes the round that nobody wants.
Periodic table again?
I don't believe it.
Are you serious? Are you going to do the periodic table again?
We got letter after letter after letter.
That's what's in the periodic table. Yes. Letter after letter after letter.
And Tom Kemp is not here to bail you suckers out this time either.
Watch us get wiped off the face of the planet.
Oh, boy.
We Argon, are gonna... Boron, and D'Artagnan. That's all I know.
I don't believe
and Meathead.
I don't believe you guessed this. Let's go on to round three, which, as we all know now, is elementary knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a clue to a word that is actually made up of several elements. Elements, that is, from the periodic table.
How
10
many?
10 points. If you can tell me the elements that make up the whole word. An example from last time, if I gave you the clue, stringing these three elements together would be heavenly. The clues stringing and heavenly should bring you to the word harp, which is actually hydrogen, argon, and phosphorus.
You can really dance to that, can't you?
We did this before. We got like 300 letters on this. You gotta
saying how stupid can they be?
Until that guy ran out of paper.
Right. All right. Let's see if we can get the chemical elements involved here, Carolyn.
Pass.
Yeah.
That's phosphorus, acetone, wait a minute, and cyanide.
Let's try. Take all the time you want. I mean, it's going to come.
I give up.
Let's pretend.
All right, Carolyn, here's the clue. These three elements form the Man of Steel's terrestrial given name.
Okay. The Man of Steel's terrestrial given name.
Yes.
What's his
Clark. You want Clark. Kent.
No.
You want Kent or Clark?
No.
Clark.
No. All right.
You
Clark.
Got,
cyanide?
You got chlora. What do you got?
Chlorine.
Chlorine.
Yes.
Chlorine.
Argon and potassium.
That's exactly right. Chlorine, argon, and potassium. And you put up such a stink about this kind of guy. I can't believe
That's it for me. I'm out of here.
All right. Let's try this one, Tony. I've heard tales from the resting place of these three elements.
Tales?
Crypt.
R.I.P.
So that's chromium, iridium, and...
It's yttrium. Y-T-T-R-U-M. But chromium is right.
Chromium, yttrium.
Chromium and PT, which is
phosphorus.
Patootie.
Patootie.
Great.
Sweet patootie.
There are 8 points there.
We use it around the house all the time.
Yes. No, we don't use it. Well, yes, we use it around the house all the time.
We use it around
many, many places.
All the time.
Oh, with electronics everywhere.
So it's polonium.
Oh, you're going to kill yourself. Audience, tell them.
Platinum.
Platinum.
Yes,
is the last
one.
So chromium, yttrium, and platinum mean crypt. Very good. That's 8 points for that. All right, Arnie, try this one.
Okay, Arnie, your turn.
Okay.
These four elements.
Four elements.
Form the surplus that occurs when there are too few workers.
Oh,
management?
Bosses?
Bosses?
Bosses is correct.
Bosses. Okay.
Boron. Go to work.
Boron.
Yes.
Selenium.
Well, yes, that's right.
Selenium.
All right.
Selenium. Good, very good.
Selenium is exactly right.
What the heck is that?
Except I believe it's pronounced selenium. It's
selenium. Selenium.
And that's
of course.
What, one S?
No.
That's two S's. That's ES.
Two S's.
That's what is it? S-E?
It's two S's.
That's S-E.
S-E.
You need the O-S, which I will help you with.
Oh, okay.
Because
oh.
Not many people will know that one. Not too many people know about osmium.
Osmium.
But I will give that to you.
Osmium.
Yes. Oh, the great, oh, right. Wonderful osmium.
Donnie and Marie Osmium. Oh. All right, we have...
So you
so
have
now the, we need
and the
ES.
Final S is what? Siblings? What is it?
Silicon?
Do you know, Tony?
Yes.
What do you got?
Sulfur.
Sulfur,
sulfur.
Is exactly right.
Oh, sulfur.
Give them 8 points for their effort.
Okay.
Nice job.
Sulfur.
The four elements from the surplus that occurs when there are too few workers, there are too many bosses. That's boron, osmium, selenium, and sulfur. All right, try this one, Francine.
Wow.
Now they get miserably difficult. Try this one, Francine. These five elements combine to make a really eye-opening compound.
Alarm?
I could say these five elements combine to make a real morning eye-opening compound.
Coffee.
Coffee.
Not coffee.
Caffeine.
Caffeine.
Oh, oh. I can see where this
well, let's try to spell caffeine, shall we?
Five.
Okay. Carbon.
Calcium.
Yes.
Right.
Calcium is Ca.
Yes.
F is fluorine.
Is correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fe is iron.
That's correct.
Iron. Correct. That's iron.
And I is iodine.
That is correct. Yeah.
And N.
N and E. So
yes.
N is
Oh, N E.
Yes.
Neon.
Is exactly
oh.
right. 10 points. Nicely done. Nicely done.
Wow.
All right, Paula. These five elements combine to form something you do not want to hear, especially when you're all alone.
Noise?
No.
Oh,
When you're all alone.
Boo.
Creaking doors.
What do you not
ghost.
Want to
hear?
Ghost.
Your psychiatrist wouldn't want you to hear these.
Voices.
Voices.
Ah, voices.
Ah,
okay.
Voices.
All righty, voices.
Okay. Is varnish an element?
I'll help you with the V if you don't know that. Take a wild shot.
Victrolium.
Victrolium.
Vaseline.
Vaselineum. Right. Verbatim.
No, it's actually vanadium. I'll
vanadium.
What is it?
For you to
it's
say.
What?
Vanadium,
V-A-N-A-D-I-U-M. Oh, what vanadium,
Velveeta.
Of course. is O, by any chance, oxygen?
It is.
Oh, it is.
Yippee.
How many are in here?
Five.
Five.
Five. So was the last S sulfur again?
No.
No.
Oxygen, and I is...
Iodine.
That's correct.
Iodine.
Oh, C-E. No, C-E.
C-E is one, right?
Well, actually, you know, you could split it up two ways here.
Yes, you
so
you could,
get credit
right?
for either one.
Right.
Okay, calcium and estrogen.
I'm carbon. This close to taking points away. This close.
Okay.
What's so, carbon?
So, carbon is correct.
Carbon.
Carbon. And then what's ES?
I'm going to give them the 6 points they deserve and go to Barry and say...
Einsteinium?
Einsteinium.
They could also,
exactly right.
It could also be cesium and sulfur.
Yes.
See, Richard, the problem is they discovered a lot of these since we got out of school.
No kidding. It's
yeah.
No way.
It could also... The end of that could also, as Tony brings up, could also be cesium and sulfur, so I would have accepted either one.
Well, I said, yeah, sulfur.
And finally, Barry... These five elements combine to fulfill Lady Bird Johnson's quest for America.
Oh.
Beautify.
Beautify. A tree, a shrub, or a bush?
Beautify.
Beautify.
Beautify?
Yes.
Beautify.
And how many elements?
Beautify.
Five elements.
All five. Right. B-E.
Boron?
No.
No.
B or B-E?
It's
beryllium.
Beryllium is correct.
Beryllium. AU is gold.
Gold, that's correct.
TI is tin.
Nope.
No.
TI is titanium.
That's exactly right.
Titanium.
F is Frankfurters.
Fluorine.
F is fluorine.
And ytterbium.
And yttrium again.
That's exactly right. Wow. 10 points. A fine job. Well done. It was to beautify America, which is beryllium, gold, titanium, fluorine, and yttrium again. Very good, you guys. That was really, wow is right. And that brings to a close this round of elementary knowledge. Yes. Can't imagine how many letters we got on that. Let's go on to round four, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Arnold, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word Nisgul. N-I-S-G-U-L, Nisgul. Gentlemen? What do Gary Russell of Melbourne, Florida, Ellen Cuevisto of San Francisco, and Bob Bird of Birmingham, Alabama all have in common? Well, all have contributed questions to Says You and thus been immortalized in the Says You Hall of Fame. And if you too wish such universal recognition, send us a question, dazzle us with cleverness, confuse us to the point of curiosity, because that's the only way into the Says You Hall of Fame. There's no way out. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. Quick reminder, Says You heads to Port Townsend, Washington, Friday evening, June 21st, for a community Says You to support the Clemente Course for the Humanities. Join Says You team captains and local denizens for an evening of wit and wordplay. Tickets, information, and details available, of course, at SaysYou.net, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. And should you wish to join the greats, John Henderson of Lodi, New York, David Zobel of Los Angeles, or Nichol Kramer of Guilford, Vermont, contribute a question to Says You, because frankly, Phil and I are hitting a dry spell. Lauren Barragar and Mark Mazengard. Thank you very much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word Nisgul. We will go first to Tony Khan.
This takes us right back to the periodic table.
Yes.
Where we were so happy.
We were so very, very happy. These are the two main chemical elements of the Jersey Shore. wait for it. Niacin and seagullium. All right, no. It is actually from India, and I apparently, God knows exactly how it's used, but it is the weight of a one-year-old child in bananas. All right, how about the chemical constituents of the Jersey Shore?
I am so disappointed it's not the Jersey Shore. I cannot begin to tell you.
And why would there be?
The weight of a one-year-old child in bananas is a miscall. Okay?
It is.
Francine, what do you say?
Well, I'm going to give you a kind of an SAT question.
Okay.
Remember the questions that went like this? As runt is to litter, Nizgul is to flock.
Okay.
Got that?
I'd say that C or D.
It's a sick little bird.
A sick little bird. Is a Nizgul. Oh, it could be. I hope not, but it could be. It might be something else. What say you, Barry?
Nizgul is beef jerky. And I remembered it from my childhood. There used to be this place when you drove back and forth before they were interstates, near the as you're headed down to vacations in Florida, called South of the Border. And they always had those rhymed signs to advertise
it. So many miles left.
So many miles left to south of the border, and they'd have some rhyme. And I can remember driving back one time, I crave a snack as I drive back. Let me be full of that snack from Bull's Nizgul.
There you go.
I thought it was pecan rolls.
Pecan rolls were also big, but I couldn't rhyme something.
Beef jerky.
I thought it was pecan rolls with a nougat center.
So Nizgul is beef jerky. It is either that. It could either be beef jerky. Boy. It could be that sick little bird. And the weight of the one-year-old child in bananas does not sound as bad.
No, it's coming back. The weight of a one-year-old child in bananas.
It's one of those three, and go for it, Arne.
Whoa.
I was working hard on this being an acronym, you know, for some kind of an American group of lapsed Catholics at the National Institute of Sinners Giving Up Lent, but... you've outdone me. Now, why would we want to know the weight in bananas? Is this, you know,
I kind of like that.
Some kind of cultural thing?
It might be.
Explain Bitcoin.
That's one thing I can't understand at all.
No.
Bitcoin.
We're not going for digital
beef jerky
money.
And a little the sick gull or bird or disgull or. Well, guys, what do you think? Those bananas are beginning to look interesting.
It doesn't sound Indian to me, and we must remember Tony was just there, so he could just be having fun with India. I don't know.
When did he say India?
He said India.
He said Indian, but maybe it's not. Maybe he just added that, and it's the weight of a one-year-old child in bananas elsewhere.
So what would you guys say?
Sick little bird.
No.
Nah. You might be right, but I'll go with nah.
Beef jerky.
Nah.
Beef jerky.
There we go.
Why would there be another name for beef jerky? How many names do you need for beef jerky?
Nah, not that kind. You got any Nizgul?
Is he going for the weight of the child in bananas?
Yes.
We're going to go with Tony. You know?
Well, Tony.
Well.
They have come to the conclusion that.
There's no coming to a conclusion.
I don't think so. No, I. They've almost mailed this one in, I guess. But come to the decision that Nizgul is the weight of a one-year-old child in bananas.
Well, my wife and I were recently in southern India. We went to the state of Kerala. We went to see a temple in the morning, and by gum, there was a very rudimentary weight. And on one end was a little baby, and on the other end was a big pile of green bananas. And we went up to the person there and said, why are you doing this, and what's it called? And he said,
oh. Yeah, okay. Well, I still think it's a little dumb.
Why not?
No, okay. This guy's dumb.
So please fake a definition.
We fake the definition. All right, audience, what do you think?
Beef jerky. We're going for
okay.
Beef jerky.
Bird
how many
jerky.
Say the how
bird
many
jerky.
Say
it's a bird jerky.
How many say the sick little bird? How many say another name for beef jerky? Well, Barry, I think
it would make sense if it was an acronym like No Intestines for this particular brand, but no, that's not what it is.
It is not.
Bird, huh? Well, there
because
you go.
A Nizgul actually is
the smallest and weakest bird in the brood.
That's what it is.
Ah.
10 points for Francine's team.
That was good, though. Okay, team. I like that.
All it goes on record.
Let's close tonight. Jeff Stern of Littleton, Massachusetts. Here says you on WGBH-FM in Boston, whereas everyone else here says you on Vermont Public Radio. Just thought I'd get that one in there. Jeff suggests a little round we call working titles. The following titles for great works of literature weren't working, so they were changed to the ones we know today.
Ah.
10 points for telling me what we're reading when we open.
Oh,
and this was the original title. Carolyn, Tomorrow is Another Day.
Oh, well.
Oh, Gone with the Wind.
Is exactly right. 10 points. Very good.
Actually, I like Tomorrow is Another Day.
These were the actual first titles for this. Didn't quite
make
it. I like
that better, actually.
Try this one, Tony. What are we reading now when we open Incident at West Egg?
Oh.
Incident at West Egg.
Is that Great Gatsby?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes. Great Gatsby.
Great Gatsby is exactly right. 10 points. Try this one, Arnie. Tell me what we're reading now when we open that which was originally titled The Last Man in Europe.
The Last Man in Europe?
This is a toughie.
Is this the spy who came in from the cold?
No.
The
Last Man in Europe.
Man,
Tony has an inkling on this. These are really hard, but I think you'll find it interesting. These were the original titles.
The Last Man in Europe.
Boy, I don't think... Tony, do you...
Are we going,
well, it's just weird hunch. No,
it's just,
are you
going back to...
Right.
Is this a 20th century novel?
It is, in fact.
It is, in fact. It's not all quiet on the Western Front.
No, it isn't. What a great guess that is, though.
Would it be War of the Worlds?
It's not War of the Worlds, but...
1984?
1984.
Wow.
It is 1984
wow.
Is The Last Man
right.
in Europe.
Wow.
So that's... I found that interesting. Try
was
this one.
Point?
No,
it was not for you.
Yeah, right. It's not for you. It's not your question. Try this one, Francine. First titled, First Impressions.
The Bible.
God thought it was good.
Is it a book or a play or a movie?
It's a book.
First impressions.
What does it sound like?
Does it?
You have to go with pretty much what it sounds like.
Photography.
First impressions. No.
Oh, Great Expectations?
Oh. No. Anyone in the audience? Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride
wow.
and Prejudice
right.
is what it yeah. is. How did you know that back there?
English major.
English major.
English major.
Finally came in handy, didn't it, sir?
$200,000 answer right there.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize to you. All right, try this one, Paula. The novel that was originally titled Stephen Hero.
Stephen Hero.
Ulysses.
Hero.
No.
Oh, Portrait of the Artist.
Portrait of the Artist is a young man. Yeah, very good. 10 points for that. That's a good job, Arnie. And finally...
Oh, Daedalus, yeah.
Try this one, and this is really hard, so I'll try to give you some help on this. What are we reading when we read the novel that was originally titled All's Well That Ends Well?
Oh. All's Well That Ends Well.
Yeah, this is really hard to believe.
Okay, War of the Worlds.
You're actually closer than you know.
Oh, All's Well That Ends Well? And it's War of the Worlds.
What's his face? Huxley's.
No. Okay. It's all, not.
But it has...
I might have thrown you off a little. So
an apocalyptic element.
Well, it has certainly a... Tony, I thought you might know this, actually.
Well, unless it were a Russian novel. Yeah. But the only one I can think of is War and Peace. Used to be called 1812.
Well, War and Peace is right.
Really?
War and Peace is correct. All's Well That Ends Well is War and Peace.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't believe that when I saw that.
I don't believe I've ever heard that before, and I studied it for a degree. So I'm with you out there with the English degree.
Well, I suggest you take it up with Jeff Stern of Littleton, Massachusetts.
No, it was called 1812.
Yeah. But in the meantime, I have to tell you that the 78-point total that you amassed, Francine, was great and good enough to win this week.
All right.
Congratulations to Francine's team winners this week. That is all we have time for this week. We have so many people to thank, but the first people I want to thank are our good and longtime friends at Vermont Public Radio. Thank you very much, you guys, for all you have done for us over the years. Thanks so much to Lance Olson and all the folks here at the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center, and to Michael Broderick, Sarah Laurie, and the great staff at the Stowe Mountain Lodge for being such gracious hosts. Antonio Oliart stands steadfast at his auditory post. Scher and Salkin scribe, and Zach Moore works from home. We close this week with the thought that you know you're from Vermont when the newest town vehicle is a Zamboni, or when you own separate pairs of boots for shoveling, hiking, snowmobiling, mud, and Sunday go-to-meeting. That's it from beautiful Vermont this week. See you all next week.
Support for CISU in Stowe, Vermont comes from the good folks at Vermont Public Radio, the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center, and the Stowe Mountain Lodge, home for CISU near the top of Vermont, on the web at stowemountainlodge.com. Spell out mountain, put an E on Stowe. You can hear CISU again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at CISU.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. Benjamin, give them the skinny.
CISU. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
Thank you. This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.